You just tuned into Outdoor News Radio, a weekly showcase of the top outdoors writers and experts in Minnesota and across the region. I'm Outdoor News Managing Editor Rob Dreisland, and I'm honored to have you join us for the next hour as we break down hunting, fishing, and natural resources topics affecting your ability to recreate in the Western Great Lakes and beyond. Our guests might challenge you occasionally, but we promise to entertain you while we're at it. Don't go away, because if you love this state's fine outdoor scene, you'll love Outdoor News Radio. This segment is sponsored by Ducks Unlimited. Join the thousands of volunteers having fun more than 3,500 times a year. Get involved at www.volunteerfordu.org. Hey everybody, welcome to another week of Outdoor News Radio. Rob Dreisland, happy to be with you. Thanks so much for tuning in to the program. We'll be with you for the next 1 hour. We're going to talk to a couple of DNR people here this week. Normally, I try to keep it to a maximum of one DNR employee, but we actually haven't had anybody from the DNR on in a long time, so I guess we're kind of doubling up this week. We will talk with Nate Hodgins about the lake management plan process that is underway right now. There's a public review period that's going on as we speak. I think you have till the end of the month to offer your comments, so we'll talk to Nate about that. Then we'll have Mike Lee. Mike is with DNR Enforcement. They're looking for applicants for conservation officers. He's going to tell everybody about that process. Tim Lesmeister here to help me kick off the show. Hey, Tim, you ever consider being a conservation officer?
Not in a million years.
No?
Okay. No. Those guys all have to work at night. I like sleeping. I go to bed at 10. I get up at 7. That's, to me, and these guys are all out there looking for people shining for deer and putting corn on the ground. I wouldn't mind being one of their pilots flying over to see if anyone's baiting and stuff like that. But no, I have no, I like being in bed.
It varies by time of year. I mean, during the winter, I think they're focusing more on ice fishing. They're focusing on snowmobilers, that sort of thing. It'd be hard to find a job where you're working more directly with natural resources than these guys, if that's something you want to do. But anyway, they're looking for some applicants. Tim, I've got a number of stories that we could kick around in this week's paper. I can't remember if we talked about Mille Lacs having a 3 walleye bag again for open water this year. That's some good news. May 9 is the fishing opener, and anglers on Mille Lacs are going to be able to keep 3 walleyes, which is pretty good. I mean, that's lower than the statewide limit, but we had a lot of years there when it was just one fish.
I think that's a great limit. You know, they've been talking for a long time about making the statewide limit just 4 fish overall. And so just dropping it 1 to 3, I don't think that's a big deal at all. And I think it's great for those Mille Lacs anglers to be able to keep a few fish. So, yeah, it's great. But I do think that the opening day walleye angling up on Mille Lacs is going to see a lot more smallmouth bass caught than walleyes. It just seems that the smallmouth bass around opener on Lake Mille Lacs are up there shallow on those rocks where those walleyes are. And it's hard. It's hard to get a crankbait, a jig, or even some live bait past those smallies. So you're going to have a lot of fun if you go to Mille Lacs. Hopefully you'll catch, you know, 5 or 6 smallmouth bass for every walleye that you catch. And that's a good thing, and it's a lot of fun.
You know, Tim, one beef I still have about Mille Lacs management, and this latest story still talked about it, is if the state goes under its quota, We don't get any bonus the next year. But if we go 10 fish over the next year, that is held against us the following year. Overages versus underages. I still don't know that I've ever had a real solid response from the DNR why that is. I guess it's simply because whatever happened the year before doesn't matter. What matters is the quota for the coming year. And if you take more than that, that's going to bite into what's I don't like it. I just flat out don't like it.
Because it doesn't make sense. You know, there are certain things that are common sense, and that would fall into that. It's one of those situations where you say, hey, we've left some fish in there for next
right.
year.
Right.
Let's have access to those. and the DNR is saying, no, actually, we like to have those extra fish in there, and we want to keep them all to ourselves. That's crazy.
You know, I guess it resets with the fall net assessments and the quota for the next year, but I don't know. It just rubs me wrong. Year after year, most years we're under lately a lot. I mean, I don't know if we've come close to half the quota the past 2 years, and yet somehow the quota is even lower this year. Now, that's not because we have any overages being held against us, but you know, one of these days we're going to have a hot bite up there, and anglers are going to hit that quota, and we're going to be back to the situation where state anglers get penalized the next year. Anyway, enough on Mille Lacs. I guess the good news is there's a 3-fish bag up there. Again, this open water season should be some pretty good fishing. So good luck to Mille Lacs anglers. Tim, you know, one story we should jump into immediately that I didn't know about till Pat Durkin wrote about it was, I guess, Milo Hansen, the gentleman who shot the largest typical whitetail deer ever taken in North America. He passed away back in February, Milo Hansen. That was a big story when it happened, and you know, I think a lot of us didn't think that record would hold for as long as it has, but it did.
I guess the first shot actually hit him in the antler.
Yeah, yeah.
And it kind of stunned him.
They did jump it. If you read Durkin's story, they did jump it several times, and they missed it several times. You're talking about farm country Saskatchewan, where there's probably, you know, massive fields even back then. And it sounded like they were just jumping it from one piece of cover to the next piece of cover. And, you know, eventually, yeah, they were able to anchor it. I know he had to be super careful with that rack until the dry down period was done and until it could be officially measured, because there was, I think they were afraid that the antler was going to break off from the base because of where that bullet had hit it in the antler, you know, that it had taken out a divot. And if it had, you know, it's got to be one solid unit connect to the skull plate. It would have been a legal deer, but it would not have been eligible for book measurement. A beautiful deer, beautiful rack, right?
Yeah, and it's a typical rack. So, oh, I mean, exactly. You're talking 14-point typical. You go, it doesn't get any better than that. So horns that had that designation prior to his buck weren't even close to 14 points. So, yeah, it was a beauty.
It measures 213 5/8. And, I mean, yeah, I mean, it's just long, you know, not a ton of mass on it, but just daggers, right? And so utterly symmetrical. It doesn't look like it had much for deductions at all. I figure it was a 4.5-year-old buck, and it has stood the test of time for, 33 years since he took it. But Mr. Hansen passing away at the age of 81. I saw him at a sports show or two over the years. I mean, after it was official, he would tour with that rack, and I did see him talking to folks, and he had it mounted behind him. I never actually talked to him or interviewed him myself. But the buck that it topped was the Jordan buck from Wisconsin.
Yeah.
It beat that deer by about 6 or 7 inches. And I don't know, is the Jordan buck still the number two? I'm not even sure.
I think it is still the number two. It's okay. You're right. The reason that this thing was scored so well is because it was long. It was not a very big bodied buck at all. It didn't even weigh that much. It just had this huge rack.
I didn't know that. I didn't know that the body wasn't that big on it.
Yeah. Hansen was actually a very soft spoken guy. He never really was a bragger about it. He never really, you know, exaggerated the story behind it. You got to give him credit for that. Just a really nice guy. So I think that's one of the reasons why people don't mind it being a record that's lasted.
There was a huge deer taken in Michigan. You remember, oh man, this is close to 25 years ago. Was it Rompola, Mitch Rompola? Man, there's a name from the past that was an incredibly big looking typical buck, but it was immediately controversial for a bunch of reasons that I don't even remember. I don't know that it was ever officially scored. Do you recall the photos of that deer all over the place?
I do.
Right around the turn of the century, I think.
Yeah, that was, everybody thought this was going to be the next big monster.
Yeah,
but it never made it into the books.
No, it didn't. I forget all the details about that Michigan deer, but I think it was taken in the northern lower peninsula, the Traverse City area, if memory serves. But anyway, rest in peace, Milo Hansen, huh?
Rest in peace, Milo. That was, you know, people say, oh, that's just a lucky shot. Hey, you know, the guy was out hunting. They hunted hard. More power to you, buddy. Yeah, rest in peace.
Yeah, right place at the right time. Right. Tim, you ready to take a break? You'll come back for the end of the show this week again?
I will. I'll come back.
All right, that's our buddy Tim Lesmeister. We appreciate him joining us. We'll circle back with him in about a half an hour. Stick around. We're going to talk about some lake management plans here in Minnesota with the DNR. Don't go away. More Outdoor News Radio after these messages.
For those walking the turkey woods this spring, carry a Bold Retay Gobbler shotgun. Top options include the Gordian Turkey Gun with its no-rattle inertia plus rotating bolt and factory lengthened forcing cone, which delivers 20% more pellets. Or the Gamelander Turkey Single Shot, available in 410 and 20 gauge in black and mossy oak bottomland with its airy recoil reduction pad. Find a dealer locator at RetayUSA.com. That's RetayUSA.com. Be the Retay difference.
Spring coho and steelhead are on, and Ken's is leading the charge on Lake Michigan. Fish with Wisconsin's number one Lake Michigan charter service, running out of three prime ports. Winthrop Harbor, Illinois, Sturgeon Bay, and Algoma, Wisconsin. Kick off the season with fast-paced, rod-bending coho and steelhead action out of Winthrop Harbor, Illinois, where limit catches are the expectation, not the exception. Spots fill fast. Call 800-446-8605 or book online at www.kinscatch.com. That's Ken Sports Fishing. Your spring bite starts here.
Attention duck hunters, are you tired of empty skies? Let's talk solutions at the Minnesota Duck Summit, March 27th and 28th in Nicolet. Join hunters, conservation leaders, and agency experts for sessions on how to take action to improve duck hunting in the region. The summit runs Friday afternoon, March 27th through Saturday morning, and includes a dinner Friday night. Register at the Fergus Falls Fish and Game website. That's fffgcmn.org, fffgcmn.org.
I'm Chris Jakimic. I served in the United States Air Force, and I've deployed three times. Being a veteran, it's interwoven into your DNA. It is really the absence of the connection and the purpose that can really drive a lot of veterans to some negative thoughts. For those who are in a suicidal crisis, the window of time to save somebody's life is very short. Our duty is to protect ourselves and protect our families, and one way you can do that is store your weapons safely. Store all your guns securely. Help stop suicide.
Brought to you by End Family Fire and the Ad Council.
Unleash the power of the Onyx Hunt app this turkey season and see how it'll become one of the best tools in your turkey vest. Use color-coded public and private land ownership information, tree species, and crop layers to scout from the comfort of your home. Then hit the field using compass mode, waypoints, and multiple base maps to help pin down more gobblers this spring. Use promo code ODN20 to receive 20% off your membership at onyxmaps.com/hunt.
By the numbers, here are the costs of not having Onyx fish. 400 extra holes drilled, 100 wasted ice miles, 20 needless gallons of truck, snowmobile, or ATV gas, 5 trips trying to catch a walleye where they don't live, 3 days of vacation you'll never get back, 2 wrong turns that cost you an extra hour at prime time, and one last time you'll waste dollars and effort. Onyx fish, $34.99 per year, 10 Midwest states, countless ways to catch more fish. As promised, I've got another guest who's going to join us here today. It's Lieutenant Michael Lee. He's the Training Coordinator Supervisor for the Minnesota DNR's Division of Enforcement. He's based out of Little Falls. He's the Enforcement Training and Recruitment Officer. Officer Lee, thanks so much for joining me for a brief chat.
Yeah, thanks for having me. Appreciate it.
Yeah, we want to talk about the fact that there is a Conservation Officer Academy application process that is underway right now. It's the CO prep program, and I want to talk about what that specifically means. Before we do that, how many conservation officers do we have, and how often do we hold an academy, and roughly how many people go through that academy?
So right now we have just a little over 200 officers that are working in the state at this time, and that would range from the chief all the way down to field officers and specialty positions that we have. We try to complete academy trainings every year, but there's a lot of factors that take into consideration with that. Stations that are open, retirement, all of that through lake attrition, and then also funding as well plays a role in that as well. 18 is probably like the best number for our academy just due to how our academy is run. More than that, it gets to be a lot of downtime for the officers during that academy process, and we found that 18 is the I would say, the golden number to keep it at.
It's important to have one of these academies every year. Law enforcement officers can generally retire after 20 years. So I know you guys churn through a lot of officers. There's guys that were rookies when I started at Outdoor News in the 1990s who have retired since then. It's an intense job, and we want to keep these positions filled, right? So that's why you gotta keep holding an academy, hopefully every year.
Yeah. And just since I started in my role with the DNR Enforcement Division, I started assisting with the academies in just an assisting role back in 2015. And since then, and this most recent academy that was completed in 2025 here, there's been roughly 133, 135 officers that have went through the academy training just in that period of time. So as you can see, those numbers have really been changing drastically over, 10 years wise. It's over three quarters of our allotment of officers has changed in that period of time.
There's a lot of training that goes on with DNR enforcement. I edit the Cuffs and Collars page, the weekly DNR enforcement reports, and I'm amazed how often I see one of the different officers say they're reporting for some training at Camp Ripley or Little Falls. Once they get through the academy, they're not done with training, are they?
No, it continues through for every officer. We're a licensed peace officer, the same as any deputy sheriff or Minnesota State Trooper, city police officer. So all the requirements to maintain your peace officer's license are also required for the officers. So that training takes place twice a year on annual events. And then also there's, game and fish law training. There's different specific job duties training that goes on throughout the year as well. So it is a lot of training that goes on for each officer every year, even after the academy, after field training is done.
Yeah, you've got the legislature changing rules and regulations. You've got DNR brass or fish and wildlife folks that might be changing the limit on a species, something like that. So yeah, you guys are going to get brought up to speed. All right, well, let's talk about the academy that's coming up. And this application period for that academy runs through March 31st. So we've got two and a half weeks left if folks want to apply. This is for the CO Conservation Officer Prep Program. How is that different from traditional conservation officer hiring?
So the CO Prep Program is an opportunity to continue with diversifying our workforce, giving people that maybe hadn't thought about a career in law enforcement or in game and fish type enforcement an opportunity to apply for this position. The requirements for the CO Prep Program would be if they had at a minimum of a two-year degree, which would be your AA or your AS degree. You have to have at least that minimum to complete then your law enforcement skills training after that. So that's a requirement just to carry a peace officer's license in the state of Minnesota. So we have that as a requirement. And through the CO Prep Program, if they are selected, the candidates are paid for, their schooling for the law enforcement is paid for through this program, as well as receiving 75% pay during their training process. And that law enforcement skills portion takes place at Hennepin Technical College. We've been joined with them on this joint program since 2015, I believe.
Just so folks understand, this is a 22-week program at Hennepin Technical College. Starts actually later this year, November 2026, runs through April of 2027. Then they go to the Conservation Officer Academy. That's another 16 weeks at Camp Ripley. That runs May through August of next year, 2027. And then they go afield, right? What's the current term? Conservation officer trainees? Is it COT that I sometimes see in cuffs and collars, where they're actually out afield for 4 months with an existing officer working real life cases, not just training, prior to taking over their own station?
Yep, that's correct. So when they move into the academy, their title is a COC, which is Conservation Officer Cadet. And then they'll travel through the 16
cadet,
weeks of
sorry.
Academy. And then move into, exactly like you said, 4 months, 16 weeks as a COC, conservation officer, working live cases, full enforcement, just preparing for that solo duty that they'll move into when they take over their own station at that point.
So this is quite a commitment, and there's a lot of training. And I'd like to think members of the public out there listening are happy to hear that there is a lot of training before they become a licensed wildlife peace officer, fish and wildlife peace officer out there. You're listening to Outdoor News Radio. I'm Rob Gerisline. We are chatting with Lieutenant Michael Lee. He's the Training Coordinator Supervisor for the Minnesota Department of Natural Resources Division of Enforcement. He's based out of Little Falls. There's an application period open right now for the DNR's Conservation Officer Prep Program, and we're chatting a little bit about that. So some of your next generation of officers are going to go through this CO Prep Program, but then you also do hire folks that are already licensed peace officers, and they just go through the academy. They don't go through the Hennepin Technical College program. Is that right?
Yep, that's correct. A lot of the people that come into that have previous law enforcement experiences working for a different agency, or they have already wanted to go that route and had the plan that they'd went through school and are able to be post-licensed. So there's a couple different things. So with that is that if they've completed a skills program, they wouldn't be able to apply for the CO Prep program. That's one of the questions that we get a lot, is once that skills portion is completed, then you'd have to apply through the traditional route that we're talking about. And we get, you know, a very good number of officers, too, that are looking at changing up their different type of law enforcement career.
And are you getting a lot of applications for these programs, or is the number of people applying for these jobs dwindled? I remember when I, in the 90s, when I was a young person looking for a career, it was almost impossible to get hired as a CO. Has that changed?
It has. And to be honest, that's been a change for law enforcement across the nation for the last couple of years. And we're seeing the same types of recruiting and hiring, issues coming up as other departments. Now, granted, not nearly as bad as some departments are. We're still very lucky that we do get a very good cadet pool and people applying for these jobs because it is such a great job. But we do still feel the struggles as all law enforcement agencies across the United States are right now.
Now, if folks want more information, they can go to mndnr.gov. That's the DNR's website. Just search Conservation Officer Careers, and you're going to get to a great page, Conservation Officer Careers and Hiring Information, that's going to break down the CO Prep Program in a lot more detail as Lieutenant Lee and I are discussing. You also have an open house, a virtual open house coming up here on St. Patrick's Day, and Tuesday, March 17th at noon, and it looks like it's really easy to access that. Folks can just click on the Minnesota DNR's Enforcement Facebook page. Just go to Facebook, search MNDNR Enforcement, and you can, looks like you can just watch it live there, noon, this coming Tuesday at March 17th.
It's a good way to get information out about the job, and then we'll go through a lot more in detail about what some of the requirements, more of what the expectations are during that virtual open house, and answer a lot of questions people have just about the job itself and what they can plan on for the future if they look at a career in natural resources.
And, you know, we should just circle back. The point of this CO Prep program is to find people who maybe didn't come up through a traditional law enforcement background who are now thinking this is something they're considering as a career. I've got a son who was learning to code. He got a degree in computer science. That field crashed. Now he's already pivoted into teaching, but maybe there's someone out there listening right now in that same situation. It's like, man, I loved hunting and fishing. I love the outdoors. Maybe I can bring some of those skills to a position like this. That's the point of the CO Prep program, right?
Yep, it is. It is. It's actually a way for us to try to get out and make those contacts with people that maybe were a little hesitant or didn't quite understand the job, or, you know, had made a decision earlier in life that they wanted to do this, but it really wasn't filling that void that they were looking for, and this would give them the opportunity. It also is a great program because it's giving us the opportunity to get different people from Minnesota.
One more time, you can go to Facebook, search MNDNR Enforcement, and check out the Facebook page there. There's links there. And again, this open house, virtual open house, will be Tuesday, March 17th at noon, or go to MNDNR.gov and search Conservation Officer Careers, and you will find all the details that Lieutenant Mike Lee and I just chatted about.
One more thing to add, too. If anybody has any further questions that don't get answered, they can certainly reach out to me at my email, and that would be mike.lee@state.mn.us. And I'll certainly get those questions answered, or if I can't give them an answer, I'll get the answer and get it to them.
Excellent. Well, thanks for joining me, Mike. Good luck with the hiring process. Take care.
Yep. Thank you. Appreciate having us on.
With that, let's grab a break. More of the broadcast after these messages.
Attention duck hunters, are you tired of empty skies? Let's talk solutions at the Minnesota Duck Summit, March 27th and 28th in Nicolet. Join hunters, conservation leaders, and agency experts for sessions on how to take action to improve duck hunting in the region. The summit runs Friday afternoon, March 27th through Saturday morning, and includes a dinner Friday night. Register at the Fergus Falls Fish and Game website. That's fffgcmn.org, fffgcmn.org.
Whatever you're hunting, be it small game, predators, gobblers, or big game, Henry Repeating Arms has a rifle or shotgun you can trust. With over 200 models to choose from, every Henry is proudly made in Wisconsin, backed by a lifetime warranty and supported by top customer service. From the Squirrel Woods to Deer Camp, there's a Henry for your hunt. Order your free Henry catalog today at henryusa.com. You'll also get a sheet of decals, the Henry Repeater newsletter, and a personalized list of local dealers. That's henryusa.com. Get your free catalog today and gear up for the season.
You fish the same waters year after year. But what if your next best fishing story is just a few miles away? Onyx Fish builds on 15 years of experience, giving hunters and adventurers a revolutionary angling tool to help you find new water, new access, and new fish. Find the right lake. Know the species, size, and abundance. Get expert local insight. Navigate to the right ramp fast. Then go fish in new lakes like they're your home waters. Don't chase reports. Make your own with Onyx Fish.
Is a trip to Alaska on your bucket list? It's time to dump that bucket and buy your ticket. And while you're there, fish the Kenai River with Jason's Guide Service. Jason is considered the best when it comes to catching Alaskan salmon, rainbow trout, and char. He's one of only a few guides that has the permit to fish in the Kenai National Wildlife Refuge, where the salmon are easy targets and the trout and char are plentiful. So cross that Alaskan fishing trip off your list and check out jasonsguideservice.com. That's jasonsguideservice.com.
Your land is your legacy, but keeping it healthy and thriving means caring for it now and in the future. The Family Forest Carbon Program can help you do right by your land, with guaranteed income, help developing a forest management plan, and advice from experts. If you own 30 acres or more of forest land in Michigan, Wisconsin, or Minnesota, you may be eligible to enroll in the Family Forest Carbon Program. Visit FamilyForestCarbon.org and enroll today.
In sitcoms, when someone has a problem, they just blurt it out and move on.
Well, I lost my job and my parakeet is missing. How was your day?
But the real world is different. Managing life's challenges can be overwhelming. So, what do? We get support. The Huntsman Mental Health Institute and the Ad Council have mental health resources available for you at loveyourmindtoday.org. That's loveyourmindtoday.org. See how much further you can go when you take care of your mental health.
Hey everybody, welcome back to Outdoor News Radio. Rob Driesline, happy to be with you for another segment. Thanks for tuning in. Hope you like the chatter here. If so, check us out online at OutdoorNews.com or call us at 800-535-5191. You can subscribe to our digital or print versions. I want to talk about a DNR public review process. They're taking some input through the end of the month, through March 31st, on fisheries management plans for, count them, 197 lakes in the state. That's a lot. There's probably a lake near you, probably a lake that maybe you have fished and you want to chime in on this. I just thought it important to flesh this out a little bit. I got a great guest here who's going to help talk us through this process. His name is Nate Hodgins. He's the Assistant Southern Regional Fisheries Manager for the Minnesota DNR out of New Ulm. Nate, thanks so much for joining me.
Thanks, Rob. Thanks for having me. You know, this is the typical process. We go all across the state at every area fisheries office and work through the process of not only submitting management plan requests and public input, but this starts way back when we do our lake survey and monitoring plans as well, too. So a lot of these processes are brought about by changes that we see in our annual monitoring. Some of these are annual. Some of them are once every 5 years is kind of a typical rotation, but it can be anywhere from 3 to 10 year rotation on these lake surveys to inform what the fishing community looks like in the lake, what we're seeing for the fish population, and then that'll help even further kind of inform these management plans. And then ultimately, we want to hear from the public on their ideas and thoughts as well, too, on what they'd like to see for these lakes.
So when folks hear 197 lakes, they might say, well, there's 10,000 lakes in Minnesota. That's not very many. Not every lake has got a management plan. How many lakes actually do we have management plans on? I got to think 197 is a little bigger percentage than people might realize.
Yeah, you know, when we talk about the land of 10,000 lakes, right, we're really looking at these lakes that have recreational fisheries. So that brings it down to somewhere in the neighborhood of 4,500 to 5,000 plans that are out there. We are looking at lakes that first and foremost have public access to angling. That's where the bread and butter of the Minnesota DNR fisheries comes in, where there's public access. So a lot of lakes don't have that. But then there is some lakes that, you know, public access can be as simple as a canoe access as well, too. So that is even down to the consideration of management planning. And it is from top in the northeast corner of the state all the way down to the southwest side of the state, which I'm a little bit more familiar with. So,
is this more lakes than you folks normally do in a year, or is 197 or roughly 200 about average?
This is about average. Yep. Somewhere in the neighborhood of somewhere between 180 and 220 lakes a year. So we're right there in the middle.
Why is this necessary? A lake's a lake's a lake, isn't it? Tell us why you folks go through this process and review these plans for so many lakes every year.
Yeah, you know, so we look into not only, you know, what kind of fish are in the lake, but what best matches the lake for fishing potential. You know, we like to ask the question of what should an angler expect to catch when they show up to a lake? And, you know, it kind of goes into, is this more suited as a walleye lake, or are we talking about something that might be better suited as a panfish lake? So those are the kind of questions we're getting to. What kind of habitat are we seeing that could support the fish community that best suits that lake? And so some of the questions that we like people to consider as we go through this public input period, and these are all listed on our area website as well under, you know, just a quick Google search will even bring you to lake management planning in Minnesota. It'll bring you to this site. And so what kind of fishing experience are you looking for? You know, these are the types of questions. In addition to, do you have any habitat concerns you'd like to share about the lake that you're interested in? What species are most important to you? And do you like catching fewer big fish or a lot of smaller fish? You know, is it more catch and release focused, or is it more harvest and oriented? So those are the types of things. And it's not only from the individual level, you know, absolutely individual angling comments are what we're after, but even lake associations, outdoor angler groups, conservation organizations, clubs, even all the way to the level of local units of government, whether it's a county or a lot of times we reach out to tribal partners, different things like that.
Like we say, it's 197 lakes in 52 counties around Minnesota where we're reviewing these lake management plans. If you want to find that list of lakes, we've got it in this week's Outdoor News. You can also go to mndnr.gov, and it's the March 2nd press release on this fisheries management plan public review. There's links there, so it's very easy to follow up and get your comment in. Generally speaking, are you asking people to contact their local fisheries office directly? Is that kind of where you want some of this feedback to land?
Absolutely. And so when folks go onto the website and they see the list of lakes, those 197 lakes we're interested in, they're each listed individually. And if you'd like to submit a comment on that, there's an email address to click on that does go to the area office. There's also an area office phone number available too. And so either format of providing input is acceptable. And if you do want to submit a plan, we just ask that in the heading of the email, you write something about management plan input, or if it's for an individual lake, you know, you could write, for instance, here, I'm looking at the A is right away. So Antler Lake in Itasca County, you want to comment on that one, you know, just let us know. So.
And I want to circle back to that public input process before we're done. Before we do that, though, reminder everybody, you're listening to Outdoor News Radio. Rob Gerisline is with you here. I'm chatting with Nate Hodgins. He's the Assistant Southern Regional Fisheries Manager for the DNR. He's out of New Ulm. We're talking about this lake management review process that the agency has going till the end of the month. If you want to chime in and comment on one of these lakes, you need to do that by Tuesday, March 31st. Now, Nate, this does not include what the kind of the top 10 biggest lakes in the state, maybe some of the most recognizable, especially fishing lakes, Cass, Cabotogama, Lake of the Woods, Mille Lacs, Upper Red, Pepin. Is that a little bit of a separate process?
Yeah, absolutely. Glad you brought that up, Rob, because we do acknowledge that we have kind of a, what we refer to as a stair-step process on our lake management plan statewide. And so these are, you know, the smaller lakes, more numerous lakes in Minnesota. And absolutely, we have our more high-profile large lakes in the state that you just kind of referred to. And those go into a completely different process. A lot of those have really intensive management and monitoring plans involved that require multiple years of input to get to the level of putting that plan together.
One reason this is necessary is because lakes change. Lakes can change pretty rapidly. We think about evolution being a really, really long process, but people can influence lake change, and that maybe accelerates it. But in a matter of 10 years, a lake can change more than we see. Are there any trends with some of those lake changes that we're seeing in parts of the state that precipitate this process a little bit, demand this process?
You know, when you bring that point up, Rob, I think it's important to know that when we see changes that can be somewhat rapid in terms of habitat that becomes available in a lake, you know, we might have certain types of vegetation or prevalence of vegetation that can support a completely different set of fish assemblages in a lake. And so, you know, it may be better suited for things like bass, bluegill, or maybe it's better suited for things like walleye and perch. And so then it kind of fluctuates from year to year, especially in really dynamic systems like I'm used to in southern Minnesota, where things can change what we call from a turbid to a clear water state. Those provide different, very different fish communities and very different abundances. And so we want to provide realistic expectations to anglers, but we also want to hear back from anglers on what they expect when they go to that lake.
Before we let you go, how would you summarize the 2025-2026 ice fishing season? Seems like I'm hearing a pretty good vibe from most folks that, maybe it would have been nice to get a little more a little more ice out of this year, especially down in your part of the state, but that overall it was a pretty good ice fishing season.
I would echo that. You know, it's a good ice fishing season, and I think I heard that the biggest trend is they would have liked a little bit more time out there, exactly what you said, where when things were good and here towards especially the end of the season, as I'm talking to you today, recording this, I just started to see some ice start to come off of a few lakes this morning on my drive into work. And so when we've got these wet days and warm weather coming up, it's really going to degrade this ice fast. And I think people would have liked to have a little bit more time out there, but it is what it is.
Well, we are out of time, but I want to remind everybody this public input process on fisheries management plans for 197 lakes in 52 counties. It wraps up on Tuesday, March 31st. So there's probably a lake near you or a lake that you visit or a lake that you fish that you want to chime in on. You should do that by March 31st. Again, I think the best way to find all these links, mndnr.gov. Go down to the newsroom and check out the March 2nd press release on this issue. Nate, thanks so much for joining me. You covered a lot, and I appreciate you carving out some time to flesh this out with my listeners.
Excellent, and I appreciate you giving me the time here, Rob. Thank you.
All right. Have a good spring. I guess it's okay for me to say that now. It's starting to feel like spring.
Yeah, absolutely. We're getting there. It might be a fall spring, but it will eventually get here.
That was Nate Hodgins, Assistant Southern Regional Fisheries Manager for the DNR down in New Ulm. Let's grab a break. More of the broadcast after these messages.
Attention duck hunters. Are you tired of empty skies? Let's talk solutions at the Minnesota Duck Summit, March 27th and 28th in Nicolet. Join hunters, conservation leaders, and agency experts for sessions on how to take action to improve duck hunting in the region. The summit runs Friday afternoon, March 27th through Saturday morning and includes a dinner Friday night. Register at the Fergus Falls Fish and Game website. That's fffgcmn.org. fffgcmn.org.
Spring coho and steelhead are on, and Kins is leading the charge on Lake Michigan. Fish with Wisconsin's number one Lake Michigan charter service, running out of three prime ports, Winthrop Harbor, Illinois, Sturgeon Bay, and Algoma, Wisconsin. Kick off the season with fast-paced rod-bending coho and steelhead action out of Winthrop Harbor, Illinois, where limit catches are the expectation, not the exception. Spots fill fast. Call 800-446-8605 or book online at www.kinscatch.com. That's Kin Sports Fishing. Your spring bite starts here.
For those walking the turkey woods this spring, carry a Bold Retay Gobbler shotgun. Top options include the Gordian Turkey Gun with its no-rattle inertia plus rotating bolt and factory-lengthened forcing cone, which delivers 20% more pellets. Or the Gamelander Turkey Single Shot, available in 410 and 20-gauge in black and mossy oak bottomland with its airy recoil reduction pad. Find a dealer locator at RetayUSA.com. That's RetayUSA.com. Be the Retay difference.
Whatever you're hunting, be it small game, predators, gobblers, or big game, Henry Repeating Arms has a rifle or shotgun you can trust. With over 200 models to choose from, every Henry is proudly made in Wisconsin, backed by a lifetime warranty and supported by top customer service. From the squirrel woods to deer camp, there's a Henry for your hunt. Order your free Henry catalog today at henryusa.com. You'll also get a sheet of decals, the Henry Repeater newsletter, and a personalized list of local dealers. That's henryusa.com. Get your free catalog today and gear up for the season.
Hey, Steve Panaz here. For too long, Minnesota anglers have not had a strong voice at the legislature or the DNR. You can help ensure the quality of state fisheries by joining the MinFish Sport Fishing Foundation. Individual memberships are free, and life memberships are available. MinFish Foundation is dedicated to restoring, protecting, and enhancing Minnesota's sport fishing opportunities. To join us, visit min-fish.com.
Like every serious angler in this region, I want to make the most of my time on the water. That's why I read OutdoorNews.com. This all-new digital resource is loaded with valuable tips, lake profiles, up-to-date fishing reports, gear reviews, and breaking news on laws and regulations that affect the sports we love. Plus, OutdoorNews.com will help you catch more and bigger fish. Be prepared and get ahead of the crowd. Join OutdoorNews.com today.
Everybody, welcome back. Outdoor News Radio. I'm Rob Dreisline. Final segment of this week's show. Tim Lesmeister is here to help me wrap it up. If you like the content of the broadcast, check us out online at OutdoorNews.com or call us at 800-535-5191 if you're interested in subscribing. Tim, thanks for helping me bring it home. My column this week, I interviewed Tony Roach and someone from the DNR talking about circling back to Mille Lacs, hooking mortality on the Big Lake. Of course, the state gets penalized for any fish that are deemed dead as a response to hooking mortality. There's an equation they use on it. Hasn't been a lot the past couple of years, maybe 3,200 pounds. We've had other years, Tim, where it's been a lot. It's been 50, 60,000 pounds during some of those real warm years. Now, the DNR is closing down the walleye fishing season during really hot years when the quota is lower so that, you know, we don't have as much hooking mortality. But Tony Roach suggesting maybe we should readjust the equation given the fact that so many guys are using forward-facing sonar now. What do you make of that theory?
I agree. Not only are they catching walleyes in shallower water, they're using baits and lures that don't actually cause the fish to swallow them down into their gullet. You know, you used to use these live bait rigs with leeches and night crawlers, and these fish would take that bait way down deep and you'd get them up to the boat and not only pulling them out of deep water, but having a hook down in there that they were pulling away at their gullet. It would kill those fish. And if you had to release them, they were just going down to the bottom and laying there and dying. That doesn't happen so much anymore. A lot of these guys are not fishing out in the mud flats. Why drive all the way out there when you can catch all the walleyes you need in 15 feet and less of water? And the forward-facing sonar is allowing them to do that. It's also that they're using jigs and crankbaits, which don't actually get that deep in the fish's mouth. So when they take the lure out and let the fish go, it's fine. I'd say you could probably cut that hooking mortality at least in half, but they won't, because it's the DNR. You can tell your DNR guys when you talk to them, any point in time when you got a DNR guy, just tell them, hey, you guys are too stringent when it comes to that hooking mortality on Mille Lacs. Got to change that.
Yeah, I mean, I talked to Brian Nairborn, and he was game to talk about the topic and the issue. He said, you know what, we've done two hooking mortality studies in the past, and they're not easy. You know, you got to catch these fish and put them in pens. And I mean, it's more laborious than I think folks might imagine. He said they did see some decrease with artificial baits in the neighborhood of 2 or 3%, which isn't a lot with some of the hooking mortality numbers we're talking about here, Tim. And I, you know, and for sake of argument in my column, I said, you know, what if they did another study and they determined, well, it's triple or quadruple what they've seen in the past, and it actually means a 10% savings. You know, even that, like last year, would be nothing. And even a year when you have 60,000 pounds, it'd be 6,200 pounds. Is that enough to alter the regulation much? Probably not. I think we all feel better thinking that those fish are not, you know, eagle food, that they're just dead at the bottom of the lake, like you said. But in terms of practically what it means for the regulation, the DNR seems to be making the point it wouldn't mean that much. Nurborn also making the point, Tim, and, you know, you and I have talked about this. Yeah, we've got 20 roach out there, and we've got a lot of other, I think, real ethical anglers that are aware of things like barotrauma and are being very careful about how they use forward-facing sonar or where they target fish. But we got a lot of other guys that are like kids in a candy store with forward-facing sonar who are actually targeting some of those deep-water fish with this new technology. You know, Nurborn saying, I'm not completely positive we'd be happy with the results, that it might actually show, some additional hooking mortality.
I doubt it would. I think that, you know, anglers are getting a lot smarter. And here's the thing that kills fish. You talk about barotrauma. When I was doing work with Aqua Innovations back in the early 2000s and into, 2005, 2006, they were doing a lot of work with walleyes in aquariums in their warehouse. And they would catch these fish and they would find out if they could, basically bring a fish out of deep water and putting it in an oxygenated environment, whether these fish would stay alive. And the ones that were gut hooked, no, they all died. The ones that you fizzed, they think about put a needle in them and drain the bladder, they all died. That fizzing does not work. Right. If you think you're going to fizz a fish and send it back down to have it live, don't. It doesn't work. But the ones that did work were was quite interesting, is they would put weights, these snap-on weights that you use for ice fishing, on those bottom fins so that they could keep the fish upright, and they'd put them in a live well that had a lot of oxygen. And in a few hours, that fish was in really great shape. They took some of these back and put them in the aquariums, and they lived for weeks, months even, and these fish were in great shape. So what you have to do is, and I don't think a lot of people realize this, and I don't think the DNR ever promotes it, but if you want to pull a fish out of real deep water and you want it to live, sometimes it's better just to, now here's the problem, you got slot limits, so you can't keep fish that are outside of the slot, so you can't keep them alive in a live well while they readjust, so it doesn't work. But it seems to me that there's a lot of things that you can do to keep those fish from going into a delayed mortality mode, and they just don't do it.
Well, we'll see if this column generates some letters or maybe some other debate on the topic. Hooking mortality is not going away, and neither is forward-facing sonar, so that'll be a fun one to track. Outdoor News Radio, Rob Zresine and Tim Lesmeister are about to wrap up the show. One final topic. There was a hearing in the state Senate, informational hearing, about lead tackle, lead ammunition. There's some legislation brewing that would eliminate it from using for fishing tackle and using for probably on wildlife management areas, maybe using in some of our clay target leagues, that sort of thing. You and I've talked about this topic in the past, Tim. I think I've stated my case that I don't think it's causing population level issues for any wildlife. Now, there was some testimony from Julia Ponder, formerly at the Raptor Center. She insists that it actually might be having some effects on our eagle population. Maybe you and I can talk about that more, but I'll get your quick take. What do you think?
Well, yeah, it definitely has an impact on some eagles because they eat these deer gut piles, and these guys shoot them with lead bullets. But it's a rare occurrence. Eagle population is expanding, but if they get one or two eagles a year that have lead poisoning, it drives them crazy. So they're like, hey, we got to make sure we get the lead out of everything so we don't have any of these eagles dying from lead poisoning. Well, you know, it's probably going to happen. There's other things that are killing eagles, probably more of them, like windmills, stuff like that. But you don't seem to want to get rid of those. So what I'm saying basically is I don't think lead is as big a problem as they think it is. With most birds, it's not a problem at all. But with some duck populations, loons, eagles, yeah, you might have a few go, but it's not many.
Yeah, I mean, I think in general we want to work towards phasing it out, but man, that's, you know, having industry do that on its own has been a long, slow process. It seems like the only time we get ahead of this topic is when we actually have some regulation that makes it hard for everybody, and that's not popular. You know, I talked to this Julia Ponder a little bit after her testimony, and you know, I made the case that you just did, that eagle populations are expanding. And she actually called me out immediately on that. She says that there's not strong census data recently that shows exactly how much the eagle population is expanding. Now, certainly anecdotally, we all feel like we're seeing a lot more eagles. I need to dig into that more, because if we don't have a baseline census on those birds, it's kind of hard to have a debate. Her greater point seems to be that, you know, all eagles out there have some level of lead, maybe not all, but a lot of eagles, even ones flying above us, have some lead in them. And is that creating immunodisorders or leaving them open so that they're more susceptible to things like avian flu? We have lost a lot of eagles to bird flu. I've strongly felt like the eagle population is expanding, and if we're losing more than a couple of year here in Minnesota to lead, Tim. You know, the Raptor Center every year gets a number of eagles with lead, and it's a horrible way to die. But my point has been, it isn't population level impacts. Julia Ponder says we don't know that. She says you can't say that, and I need to understand the topic better, I guess. But there's no doubt that requiring everybody to go to lead would be a big change. And like California condors, Tim, if you don't eliminate lead bullets on the landscape in Southern California and Arizona, you're not going to have condors, because that's what they do, is they eat gut piles. And that's what they've done down there. And that is clearly a quote-unquote population-level impact. You got to do that down there. I don't have a problem with it. But asking everybody in the lower 48 to use copper because of eagles, when I don't think there's been this population-level issue, still, to me, seems like a step too far.
Yeah, you make a good point here, Rob. You don't probably need to do this like in farm country. Are there eagles in farm country? Not many, but there's a lot along the river. Maybe what you do is set up some zones, copper here in these zones. We don't care if you use lead in these zones. They were talking about making it impossible for, you know, these shooting leagues to use lead and shot shells. I think that's crazy. I think you're shooting in areas where, you know, you're pretty much are restricting the lead to these, you know, very tight restricted zones, you know, on these shooting ranges. I don't think you need to worry about it too much there. So restricting those people is kind of doesn't make sense to me.
I definitely would ask my fellow hunters, especially if you're in eagle country, you know, like you said, in the, you know, along the river corridors or in lake country, and you know, more, you see eagles everywhere these days, but make the choice to use copper bullets.
No. And I gave up lead. I don't have any lead anymore. I shoot steel. I still have a lot of bismuth that I bought whenever I used to see a sale price on bismuth shot shells. And I like bismuth a lot. I think it works great. And I do think that steel's fine as long as you know, make sure that you're using the right choke tube and pattern your gun. I think that copper bullets work great. And so I don't have a problem with those either. I got rid of lead a long time ago, did it on my own. But I think, you know, basically making laws to restrict this kind of thing, just blanket regulations, they don't work.
Well, okay, I was about to sign off there, Tim. But I mean, blanket regulation in the case of eliminating lead shot for waterfowl did work. And, you know, you could do it for everything, but it would cost industry a lot, and it would cost hunters a lot more. I think we agree. Let's everybody take that personal choice and at least use copper bullets. I think that's a good start. We're out of time, Tim. Thanks for joining me, man.
All right. We'll catch up to you soon.
Thank you to Tim Lesmeister, all of our other guests. Everybody have a great week out of doors. Rob Gerisline signing off for Outdoor News Radio.
Missed a segment from this week's edition of Outdoor News Radio? You can hear a podcast of the complete program at OutdoorNews.com or via your favorite podcast streaming platforms. And for the rest of the story and the topics we cover here on the program, get yourself or a friend a subscription to Outdoor News. Just visit OutdoorNews.com. And don't forget to join us next week on this station to talk everything out of doors.